This is a recording of Mrs. Bustle of 14 Wellsworth Lane, Rowland's Castle, recorded on the 27th of October 2004. A moment or two just to make sure it's recording. So,
My name is Jennifer Bustle. I was born Jennifer Winnicott on the 10th of the 7th, 1936.
What is your earliest memory, Jennifer?
My earliest memory was when I was living in Cosham, where I was born, with my mother's mother standing behind me, having lifted me up to look out of the window. After that, I think the next memory was being shown the cot into which my brother Robert had been placed when he was born.
What age were you?
I was 3, and he was born in 1939.
And what did your father do at that time?
He was a builder, having followed into his father's company, which is R.J. Winnicott Limited, which is going today in the fourth generation, now in Rowland's Castle. Obviously was based in Portsmouth, in Cotner, where my grandfather started, and moved to Rowland's Castle after the war, when the land, the building was sold at Cotner, and came up to Rowland's Castle.
And where did you live?
We lived in Deerleap. My grandfather had bought the house in either late 1938 or 1939, and then with the outbreak of the war, he decided that it would be a good move for us to get out of Cosham at Portsmouth to come to the country. And in fact, there were about 4 families in Deerleap at the beginning of the war, and he had to move out of his bigger house in Cosham and moved into my parents' smaller house, as it was wanted by the army. So I had a very, very happy childhood in Deerleap, with about 11 acres. What more could a child want? People used to come in to play with us rather than we going out to play. And it was a very happy time, and I was there until I got married in 1961.
Were there just the two of you, Robert?
No, there were 3 before the war and 2 after. There were a total of 5. Robert was the next one to me. Then Gillian was born in 1941, followed by Trevor, Geoffrey in 1940. And Geoffrey in 1947, and Trevor in 1951.
Did you go to the village school?
No, we didn't go to the village school. My sister and I went to a private school in Havant, known as Brightside. And Robert and Geoffrey went to Beedale's. Trevor started off at Dunhurst, but then went over to a school in Sussex. We all went to the village Sunday school, and that's how we learnt and mixed with the village children, which was great fun.
Where did you go after
Brightside? After Brightside, I went down to Portsmouth to the Commerce Department and learnt shorthand typing because I had no idea what I wanted to do. Thereafter, at the end of that term, I went on holiday and came back to my father saying, well, the girl in the office has left, so you better come in and help us out until you find a job or we find somebody else. And I stayed there till I got married. So that was for until 1961, having left school at 16. So it was 8 years, 10 years.
And did you enjoy working in your father's office?
Yes, I didn't find it a problem. After a couple of weeks of finding my feet and other people realising that I wasn't that difficult to work with, and I didn't have any favouritism from my grandfather or my father, I was accepted.
How many were there of you in there?
There were three in our immediate office and another three in outer offices, as well as my the directors.
So the office was in Roman Cross?
No, it was in Cockner.
It was in Cockner.
Yes, I had to catch a train and or buses and get myself to Cockner from Rowlands.
Yeah. You never had a car?
Oh no, I never had a car.
No.
It was a train down to the town station and then a trolley bus back up through Lake Road and so on up to Cockner Bridge.
You left to get married. Who did you marry?
I married John Bussell, who had been farming at Old Idsworth Farm, but when his father died the year before, the farm was sold because he wasn't able to carry on farming and maintain his mother and younger twin brothers. There were obviously death duties to be paid, and he didn't, in his own words, know how to farm a small farm. He could only farm a farm of 1,000 acres. So he decided that perhaps he would, the only thing he could really do properly was drive a lorry, having spent his time in doing national service as an instructor, teaching people how to drive. So he thought it was a good point to jump from. And at the time, my father had just bought the brickworks and was looking for a contractor to cart the bricks. So it fell into place quite well. So he came into the family, he bought his lorry, and J.M. Bussell started work under his own name. Later it obviously became J.M. Bussell Limited, and the lorries grew until we had 30. But that is how the brickworks and John came into Hornwich.
Tell me how Rowlands Castle Brickworks came into your family.
My father, together with another family member, bought Rowlands Castle Brickworks in late 59 or 60, I'm not exactly sure. But it had been a brickworks for obviously for years and years before. In fact, it was mentioned in the Domesday Book, or it was certainly about that in Roman times. So the brickworks had been around for a long time. My father had, before the war, made bricks in the old-fashioned clamp ways, both at Gosport and on Portsea Island, when they were building houses. So his interest had always been in bricks, And when it became available, he thought it would be a challenge to have a go. The brickworks themselves abut the land of Deer Leap, which is on the south side of the village. The entrance is via a drive between, at the end of the green, next to Deer Leap Cottage. It winds its way past Deer Leap Walk and turns to the left. In the original state, the office was straight in front of you. It's now, I believe, known as the sample house, but it was the office and built as such. It just seemed a good idea, apparently, years ago when it was built, to use the different kinds of bricks and tiles. The actual entrance to the works themselves, you turn to the right in exactly the same way as you do the land as it is at the moment. The buildings themselves were in about three sections. I'm not exactly sure of the layout now, but the big kilns were the first thing you met, and therefore the bricks went in, were dried and came out and onto the lorries to be delivered else, all over the place. Above the kilns were the fire holes which the men used to drop the coal down to keep them burning for a certain time. They made the bricks the engineering bricks were dark blue. The engineering bricks were fired in greater heat, and therefore they were worth more money because they were used for places that needed very, very hard bricks. The flattened type of brick were used for faces on houses, etc. And the rough bricks, which hadn't done too well, were the commons, and they were usually used on the inside of buildings and so on. The men used to work from 7:30 in the morning, if I remember rightly. The whistle used to blow. I remember that as a small child for a long time. Called all the men from all round the village to make sure they were there on time. It went again at 12 o'clock when they went home for lunch, back again at 1 and 5 o'clock finish. I can't remember whether the whistle went for break at 9 or not, but I know they used to have a break. The men who fired the bricks worked in two shifts, if I may remember rightly, but they certainly worked all night, topping up as required. The bricks started as clay. They were dug. The clay was dug by a 10RB machine, which dug it out, put it into little trolleys, which were pushed on railway lines up until to the top of one particular building, where it was tipped in, and it was thereafter rolled, and obviously the little stones and so on were rolled out, and it gradually fed its way down to the bottom of the building, where it was squeezed out like a sausage, and the bricks were cut into shape by wire cuts, hence the name of the bricks were called wire cuts. They were taken off from there and they were put onto drying stillages, which were then wheeled away and put into the kiln to dry. The number of employees was probably 25. I stand to be corrected on that. There was one man in the office who ran the office, taking the orders, sending out the invoices, doing the delivery notes in the first instance, and working out the payroll. Also in the office, of course, was the punch card machine that the men had to check in and check out of every day. There was also, for a long time, a manager who used to live in a house with the gates just inside Woodbury Lane. However, he didn't come round the long way. He always came up over the railway. There was a crossing there that gave him a shortcut. But he also had to come over the siding, which was specifically for the brickworks. This was never used in my family's time, but it had been for the previous company. The flat trucks used to be backed into the siding, and they were obviously stacked on there and taken away at a later date by the train. Because in those days, Rowland's Castle had a huge siding and works at the station anyway, because all the coal used to come in for miles around from Horndean to goodness knows where by the various other the coal lorries, and the farmers used to use it for sugar beet time. There were the tractors used to be coming down through Finchdean Road from as far away as Compton to fill up and disappear. It was a very active goods yard, was Rowland's in those days. Carraways now reside upon that area. I can't remember exactly when my father stopped the brickworks. He got through one time when there was a recession and house building stopped, and I think it was probably the second one that he finally decided that it wasn't making any money, it was losing more than it was making, and he stopped. It was a time when Reeves of Emsworth were looking for extra yard space, and they came in and bought it. And after about 2 years, Reeves also bought Deerleap. Mother and father by then had only two of the five children left, so were looking for somewhere smaller as well. So they sold Deerleap, except for a certain corner which had been growing, which is now Rowland's Castle Hardware. Which he started as a very small shop. He knocked a hole in the flint wall, put in two windows, which was about the size of our patios today. I think he had on APRO from a supplier a green bath from the bath, the basin, the loo. And those sat there for ages. I don't think anybody ever did buy that green unit. But that was the beginning of the hardware.
When did they purchase
the Emsworth? That you'd have to talk to either Adrian Roberts' son. I wasn't even living in Rowland's. Having moved out in 61 to live in Bedhampton, I didn't come back to Rowland's until 1978. So I was very much involved in running my husband's business from home, and with two young children to look after as well. The hardware and Winnicott's sort of evolved. They came out of Portsmouth. Winnicott's came out of Portsmouth and came into the land at Rowlands behind the hardware shop. They built the joiner's shop, and they ran that quite successfully for a long time until the building trade altered. Subcontractors came in instead of direct labour, and people no longer made their own stairs and doors and window frames, so it wasn't needed. So I don't really know an awful lot about the hardware side of that.
When
from there.
When your parents moved out of Derry, where did
they go? Their intention was to move back into the house they owned at Cossum. And so they had to wait for the tenant to find himself somewhere else. And so they lived in about three places, and in fact they were quite a little while in Bosham. They had a nice house in Bosham where they were looking after for somebody while they were away for 6 months. And then they eventually went back to Cossum, which they hated after Dearly and the quiet. But it was something. And then the house that they now live in Wellsworth Lane came up for sale, and my father bought it. And they've been happily there ever since, till my mother died in April of this year.
And you were helping your husband with his business while living in Bedhampton.
That's right.
And you had two children?
I had two children, yes.
Who were born what year?
Jane was actually born at Dearly. She was born in 1965. And Bridget, my second daughter, was born in 1968 at Bedhampton at home.
Did they live in Bedhampton?
And then when we moved in 1978, they, yes, came to the village, obviously with us, and they both got married from home as well. They went to Ditcham Park School, so I was on a school run. In a rota, and then when I came back after the school run, I went to our office, which we had above the hardware shop for some years.
Jennifer, what can you tell me that you remember about village activity?
Well, every summer there was the Conservative Garden Party, which was run at the Miss Stubbington's at the top of Red Hill for a long time. And when the Miss Stubbington's sold their property, it was taken to a couple of other places, one of which was Dearly. And for several years, my father let the Conservative Party come in and run this garden party. They used our swings, our seesaws, and all the usual things that go on in the garden parties of old, like rolling for various things, or darts, and all the flowers in the flower tent. There were pony rides at the in a field. In the winter, the Labour Party used to run dancing classes on a Friday night. It was ballroom one Friday and country dancing or square dancing the other fortnight. And everybody used to attend regardless of their political affinities.
Can you remember any other village
We used to have visits occasionally from the Cosmopolitans or something. I think they were something to do with the police. Other than that, I lived through wartime, so if I caught the train home and it was dark, there were no lights, other than a glimmer from the station. But as long as you followed the path down from station to Bowes Hill, which was a railway line, which you can still just see there these days, get across to the other side, and then you could feel your way against the wall, Wiggy's Wall, Wigginton and Hearn's Wall on the corner, and cross the road and get myself home to Dearleap. But of course, D-Day, and the soldiers were in the village, the Canadians were installed in Stansted. There were soldiers also all over the green, all under Dearleap Wall. Small tanks, I can't tell you which they were called, but were backed under Dearleap Wall. And if we had an old bit of iron fencing leaning against it, so we climbed up and we could look over and see what they were doing. And we got quite friendly with these soldiers, whether they were washing, shaving or eating their dinners. You just had a chat over the wall with them. And in fact, my mother used to do the same in the evening. She used to have a look over and have a chat. She noticed one particular evening that they were quite getting tidy, and when we woke up the next morning, they were gone. It was D-Day. My husband tells the tale of trying to get to school to Churches, caught the train to Petersfield, and they couldn't cross the road for an hour and a half to get into Churches. But the masters couldn't say anything because they were all stood along there as well. It was just continuing. Finchdene Road was jam-packed from one end to another for about 3 days. It was just amazing. They were there and they were gone in such a short time. Also, at D-Day at time, or just before, the Canadians living under tents in Stansted used to be entertained by local people in the village. My mother always used to have about 4 or 5 of them that used to come in most evenings just to have a bit of warmth, a cup of tea and a chat, and often played cards. Another couple who also lived in the house in rooms at Dearleap used to entertain a particular couple of lads, and I know Mrs. Benson used to darn and re-darn their socks for them, which was obviously very homely and made them feel welcome. In fact, one particular gentleman, Canadian, used to have food parcels sent over for us as children, and we used to get something like a Dundee cake at Christmas and beautiful warm jerseys. Weren't we lucky?